We need a political party dedicated to the Russians that prevented World War III. There's two of them during the Cuban Missile Crisis. There was a Russian sub that was bombed. They thought that war had already been attacked. They thought they had already been attacked. They thought World War III had already started. They had direct orders that if they lost communication and were under attack, they needed to send their missiles, their nuclear missiles, at a major U.S. city. We were bombing. We were dropping depth charges that would go off at a certain depth, trying to maintain a barricade to keep Cuban Soviet boats from making it to Cuba. Well, they thought that they were under attack. They thought that we were specifically attacking them. Anyways, we knocked out their communication, and they thought World War III had started again. So with the knowledge that they had, they were told that they should go ahead and send their missiles at a major U.S. city. They had all the coordinates locked in. But the commander of that vessel said no. He just disobeyed what he thought was what he was expected to do. And he's just like, no, I'm just going to wait this out. I'm just going to anyways, so if he would have fired those missiles at America, America was fully launched and ready to annihilate Russia, and Russia was fully launched and ready to, you know, annihilate the United States. There was another Russian that was had equipment malfunction, and he had software that told him that Russia was under attack. And so he had the button. He was another person who had the button. And I don't know any of their names. But there's two Russians that had systems in place telling them that they should start World War III. Chain of command, expectation, training, the whole Russian military, all of the political apparatus, all of the equipment, all of the electronics, all of the mechanics, all of the nuclear devices, everything was built up, all of the procedures, all of the training, everything was telling them, everything was built up, all of the history, if you look back at everything, everything was built by systems and procedures and processes telling them what to do. Somehow, they were able to overcome all of the training, all of the conditioning, all of the Mother Russia, all of the country, all of the patriotism. Everything was telling them, push that button. Start World War III, annihilate the world. Just annihilate all humanity. You know, there's a good potential that no human being would survive a nuclear war. Everything was telling them, proceed. Your job, your function, what you need to do, the correct thing for you to do, is to start World War III. The patriotic, the best thing for you to do. Somehow they believed that the human beings, the continued survival of the human species was was the most important thing. Somehow their action, and I don't even know if that's what they decided or why. You don't know why they decided to continue to allow humans to survive. But, you know, there's two times that we've stepped, you know, Khrushchev and Kennedy stepped to the brink. And there's two times Russian citizens, you know, have kept us from falling off the precipice into that dark chasm of annihilation. So I don't know either of their names, and that's a problem. We need a political party that's dedicated to the continued existence of human beings and the processes that will allow us to continue to survive. So there's political parties built on the assumption of political theory, and there's here in America, there's a duopoly. There's two political parties that are able to maintain a monopoly between themselves, between the two of them, and prevent new ideas, new ways of doing things from coming into existence. And they both are able to maintain power and stop new ideas. And they're able to, they're acting recklessly. The political parties are accusing their fellow countrymen of treason, of heinous crimes, of evil, and not just believing bad ideas, but being evil people. The two political parties are continually escalating destruction of the other parties. And the party leaders kind of like it, because this having us hate each other, tearing us apart, the red state, blue state, with Colin Quinn type stuff. They like it because it's a way of controlling us, getting us excited. When we're angry, we are more likely to donate money. And it's the same thing with the news media. The news media wants us angry. You know, they have commercials they need to sell, and they can't go into depth with any topic because they need to sell their commercials. And, you know, every 5 minutes they need to take a commercial break. And you can't go into any depth because, you know, 5 minutes from now, after that commercial break, you know, you got 3 minutes of commercials you got to go through, or 2 minutes, or, you know, sometimes shorter, you know. So you can't go into depth because none of your audience is going to make it through the commercials. They just tuned in, and there's no time to go into depth of anything. They just have to scare you and anger you so that, you know, you'll keep coming back. So our two initial first presidents, George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, warned against creating a two-party system, because in a two-party system you have groupthink, and we've never really had a two-party system until the last 15-20 years, because we didn't really have nationwide groupthink or a power structure. We had regional power. So there used to be, you know, liberal Republicans and conservative Democrats, and there wasn't really as much groupthink or uniform. Now there's no regional power. There's a party with a party leader, and if you do anything to go against the party leader, you can be punished anywhere. And so if you vote against your party, you are ostracized and hated. And there's enforcement of everyone must fall into line. And so there's groupthink within the two-party systems here in the United States. There was one Republican that voted with the Democrats for impeachment, and he was severely punished. And, you know, death threats, people hating him. And then there was one Democrat that, she was a woman, I can't remember what her name was, but she voted against impeachment. And again, the same thing, she's punished. And there's now, unlike ever before, there's a national political system that's forcing groupthink and uniformity. So now, unlike there's ever been times before, there's been uniformity of thought, and all the votes are along partisan lines. So you have all the Republicans agree and all the Democrats disagree. There's no independent thought. And so there's this mechanized system of mobilizing outrage. And that's so contrary to these two Russians who didn't do what they were told. They didn't do what, you know, it was expected of them. They were expected to push the button. And instead of having groupthink, they thought through, not what they were expected to think, not what they were expected to say or do. They made a decision not based on outrage, but they took a breath outside of, they weren't operated on by media, and they stepped outside of all of those external controls, and they made a decision. They stepped into, you know, the pantheon of the most important people to ever live, and they made a decision based on protecting the continued existence of the human species. And you know, you step back into the clamor of the news media and the political parties trying to tear each other apart. And all of the clamor and the loud and the shouting. And we need to step aside from the Republican Party and the Democrat Party and the news media and these stupid fake debates. And we need to step into a world that's quietly and rationally and calmly and intelligently creates systems that ensure the continued existence of the human species. And we can create political parties that are dedicated to this calm, rational, thoughtful, patriotic, and human and life respecting political party that doesn't demonize, it doesn't use emotion, it doesn't advertise, it just steps into a place of love for what we've accomplished so far and respect of the people that we're supposed to hate. And okay, this all sounds really hippie, very stupid, but we can do it with simple things. Cass Sunstein wrote a book called The Cost-Benefit Revolution. So there's a process where you make decisions not based on, you know, oh, let's see how many people we can convince with this argument, and let's go on the TV and let's make commercials. There's a process that ties your decisions to the outcome of an analysis, and you look at all the cost and you look at all the benefits, and we're making decisions as a country based on a political process with advertisements and commercials, and let's just fight it all out. Let's have the Republicans fight the Democrats, and let's make a decision. Oh, let's just follow a political process of, you know, fighting it out. Let's just be like dogs in the street and see who wins. That's basically our political process. And the Republican Party, you know, they both enjoy it. They both get, there's all these consultants that make all the money off of this process. And there's a whole military-industrial complex. There's a military-industrial complex of ideas. And there's professional people who love the process of fighting things out in the street like dogs. Let's just see who can win. But that's not a process that's going to lead to and ensure the continued survival of the species. You know, just this process of fighting things out. Again, we need to step out of all of these processes that we're in. We need to step out. So like this, we're all standing in a current of water, pushing us towards something, pushing it, telling us to push the button. And, you know, you and I are standing in a system. We're exposed to the winds and the rushing waves of, we're standing in the river of people trying to get us to join their party. Oh, and you know, demonize, oh, the we got to hate the Republicans, or, oh, we got to hate the Democrats, or the media. Oh, you got to, you know, tune into Fox News tonight, or, oh, you got to tune into MSNBC. There's all of, we're standing, we're surrounded by all of these waves trying to push us in a certain direction. And we need to step out of those systems. Those systems are damaging, they're stupid, they're destructive, they're going to destroy our society. We need to calmly lift our head above the water, and we need to see clearly, and we need to start a political party that steps out of all of that. And we're going to make decisions using the techniques in Cass Sunstein's book that, I mean, there's a whole process. There's a process for moving forward and finding the best path forward. And the process is cost-benefit analysis. And so we need a political party that says we're going to use cost-benefit analysis. And the ultimate goal is the continued survival of the species. And, you know, there's lots of other decisions that we can make along the way. We can not make decisions because we're in a process of, you know, tit for tat retaliation, and we need to, you know, really show it to, you know, we need to win, and we need to really show the Democrats, you know, those libtards, we need to really pay them back for, you know, what the last president did. And, you know, it's not this fight that we need to win. The fight is with ourselves. We have seen the enemy, and the enemy is ourselves. You know, this coronavirus, just, there's people that warned about viruses, and we've had many near misses. The Spanish flu was one that hit us pretty hard, but, you know, we've had a number of near misses, and we've had a number of near misses with these nuclear systems. You know, we need to not rely on our current systems that are just saying, oh, let's just fight it all out, and let's just continue this system of demonization and hatred. We need to step out of that and create a political party that uses cost-benefit analysis. All right, I'm starting to repeat myself a little bit. I don't know how to say it any better or clearer, but we need to make decisions based on the likelihood of each cost, benefit, or risk. And how do you know the likelihood of each cost, benefit, or risk? Well, you make arguments, and so you have a belief, and you have a belief that this cost, benefit, or risk is likely or not likely. And beliefs have arguments, they have sub-arguments. So a sub-argument can be true, it can be important, and it can be relevant. So let's say you have a belief that the sky is blue. I'm sorry. Let's have a you have a belief that, we should implement a tax, but a sub-argument is, a reason to agree with this tax is that the sky is blue. Well, the sky is blue, and that's true. That's blue back behind the clouds. But that probably isn't very relevant. So again, conclusions can be are all right. Each conclusion needs a score, and the score needs to be based on the cumulative or the total evidence for that conclusion. So you look at all of the evidence. All right, so you have costs, benefits, and risks, and then you have arguments of why those cost benefits and risks are likely or not likely, and you evaluate each of those arguments on a you give them a score for being true, relevant, and related. So, the if you're trying to decide, should we go to war with Iraq, the weapons of mass destruction, they have weapons of mass destruction is a sub-argument. So the belief is we should go to war with Iraq, and a sub-argument or a reason to go to war with Iraq is the belief that Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. So if you strengthen the belief that Iraq has weapons of mass destruction, then that belief strengthens the other belief that we should go to war with Iraq. Well, there's reasons to believe that Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. Saddam Hussein won't allow us to inspect. And that's a fact. That was a fact. We knew as a fact that Saddam Hussein wouldn't allow us to inspect. And we took that fact and said, that proves that they have weapons of mass destruction. The fact that they won't let us inspect proves that they won't let us, proves that they have weapons of mass destruction. If they have weapons of mass destruction and they threaten the United States, by that logic, they said, we need to go to war with any country that has weapons of mass destruction that is threatening our existence. And so, they had a political system that was based on, the generals and the president going into a room and debating it for like a week. They went back and forth. And they had a political system that after a week they made a decision. Well, that's a political process. And that's the same political process that, got us the Cuban Missile Crisis. And it's not thorough. They didn't fully investigate all of the sub-arguments. They didn't investigate the fact that Saddam Hussein didn't want to admit that he didn't have weapons of mass destruction. He wanted to keep up his appearance. He felt macho. He liked thinking that he had weapons of mass destruction. He liked his enemies thinking that he had weapons of mass destruction. And he wasn't acting rationally. We assumed that he was acting rationally, and he just wasn't. He had a empire where he maintained control by the fear of all of those people around him. He, you know, tortured and killed anyone who opposed him. And that whole system required a, you know, a braggadocio, a guy who, you know, caused his enemies to not know what he was up to and be afraid of him. And so Saddam Hussein was living in a world where he couldn't admit that he didn't have weapons of mass destruction, because his life and his whole empire was all a house of cards that was built on, you know, sustaining fear, you know, of punishment, to and that he had the ability to punish anyone who didn't properly fear him. So we assumed he was a rational actor. We just said, you know, hey, we're gonna make the stakes so high if you don't let us inspect. You know, we're gonna come and remove you from office, and we're gonna just destroy your country if you don't let us inspect. And we thought, oh, any rational actor will listen to that. But we made assumptions that if we would have had, so we had five guys in a room that decided, you know, they argued and they did their very best to make a decision, you know, do we go to war with Iraq? But that was just like five guys in a room. It was the generals, and they went through all of the arguments, and they prayed, and they did their very best, but they made the wrong decision. And okay, so what I propose is a system that does a cost-benefit analysis for every decision. So we're going to make a political party that outlines all of the potential costs for every decision. So we're in, you know, the Republican Party that helped George Bush make that decision. The Democrat Party, you know, they just, oh, they were burning, you know, effigies, once he decided to go to war, or, you know, I'm sure there was peace protesters that knew that he was what he was contemplating. And so, you know, they had the political process where the Republicans are all like, oh, stand by our president, you know, waving the flags. And you have the Democratic process. Oh, you know, he's a killer. He just wants to go to war. And then, you know, the political parties didn't really help him. And then, you know, the news and the media, they kind of went a little bit into each, it, you know, the pros and the cons. But they didn't really address any of the arguments. So the people that really went into the pros and cons of war the most were, you know, George Bush and his generals. They did the very most thorough analysis of all of the arguments. And so all of those people that were self-righteous and got on news and the media, and they're like, oh, we should go to war because of this, or we shouldn't go to war because of that. You know, George Bush and his generals, they addressed every single one of those arguments in depth, and they worried about the consequences, and they honestly did what they thought was right. They just were wrong. It doesn't matter that George Bush was praying. It doesn't matter that he tried really hard. It didn't matter that he had all of the intelligence of the federal government at his hands. He still was wrong. He made a decision, and it cost trillions of dollars and precious American blood and, you know, thousands of lives and, you know, millions of lives of the Iraqi people. And, you know, the consequences still haven't all played out. And he made a wrong decision against, it doesn't matter that our political parties and our individuals and our presidents and our governments are trying to do the right thing. They are using words in a room, and they're going through the arguments as best they can, and they just don't have the means to go into all of the sub-arguments and to give them scores and to base the sub-argument scores by all of their sub-arguments. And so there was assumptions about Saddam Hussein that weren't accurate. And, you know, we should have had an online decision algorithm that, you know, asked, is Saddam Hussein a rational player? And is he, you know, capable of being reasoned with? And we thought he was. We went to war because we thought that he was a rational actor, and we thought that he would respond to consequences, and we should have known that no, he had given up any consequences. He wasn't living in a world where he cared at all about his citizens' continued existence or happiness or health. He had committed himself to power. He was committed to power at all cost. And you can't reason with people that are committed to power at all cost. He just wanted to, he's like, if we take down the country with me, yeah, it's fine. I don't care. I'm committed to this. I don't care if we take down the country with me. I enjoy being the guy in the front of the, I like being the guy that's saying, oh, launch the missiles. That was all fun for Saddam Hussein. He wanted to be the guy that fought America. And he had an image of himself as being the guy that fought America and stood up to America. And, you know, n nothing, I don't know. But we need a political party that outlines all of those arguments and has conclusions. All right. So, cost of going to war, benefits of going to war. We don't make decisions based on, oh, anecdote or, you know, little arguments that aren't fully tested. So we have all of the cost and benefits on both sides, and then we give a score to how likely they are based on all of the sub-arguments. And sub-arguments, again, have three features that we're going to give them each separate scores for. That they can be true, they can be relevant, and they can be important. And, you know, something can be true, but it can be irrelevant. Like the sky is blue, doesn't really matter if we should, you know, go to war with Iraq. You know, something can be true or not. You know, we thought it was true that Saddam Hussein would respond to reason. You know, that turned out not to be true. So that belief that Saddam Hussein will respond to reason, and he can be reasoned with, you know, we had all of the evidence, you know, that should have harmed that belief. We should have known. The generals, you know, should have questioned their assumption that Saddam Hussein was a rational actor. And I believe my algorithm would have done a better job than the federal government, you know, people standing in rooms and arguing with each other and using their like relationships and, oh, whoever, you know, as more confident is going to speak more, and we're going to promote the people that are smarter, and we're going to get the right people in the room so that the right people in the room are going to make the right decision. Our institutions have failed us, that we're not going to get the right people in the room. We need to cut through all of that, and we need to get the right analysis in the room. We need to get the clarity of doing a cost-benefit analysis for every decision, and we need each conclusion to be built by the strength of the evidence. And anyways, I'm repeating myself because I don't feel I'm explaining it accurately or important. I'm not explaining it in a way that is convincing, but it's true. It is true. Our political parties are broken. Our institutions have failed us. They've tried to shove us into nuclear war. They told us to push the button to start nuclear war. The Russian system was telling the Russian guys, you know, start nuclear war. And you know, there was Chernobyl, but Chernobyl's nothing compared to, you know, missiles flying into Washington, D.C. And then we would have seen those missiles flying towards us, and we would have destroyed Russia, the Soviet Union. We would have destroyed them, and they would have destroyed us. And our systems have failed us, and we still haven't replaced them. Our Republican and Democrat parties, you know, shoved us into destroying ourselves, and we still haven't realized it. And you know, we have trauma after trauma. We have the financial crisis, and we have COVID-19, and we have just catastrophe after catastrophe that could have been prevented by intelligent people doing the right thing. And we're just like, no, let's just keep our political system where we have people yell at each other and demonize each other and do commercials and try to convince us 15-second commercials that the other person is, you know, vote for me in a because I have a 15-second commercial that shows me as being real smart and a good guy. Yeah, let's just keep this system. No, please donate to a political party that uses cost-benefit analysis and that's dedicated to following the data. We're not gonna assume that we have a dogma that's correct. Oh, I'm the small government party. Oh, I'm the big government party. Oh, I'm the compassion party. Oh, I'm the justice party. Oh, you know, let's forget all of these stupid arguments that we've had since the 60s and the 50s, really. And let's stop reliving them and just saying, oh, I'm the better party. Oh, I have better ideas. You know, it's better if we have justice than forgiveness, you know, because justice is better. Or, oh no, forgiveness is better. No, let's just use freaking cost-benefit analysis and make every decision. And then we're going to follow the data. That's kind of the only, all, you know, I'm 37 minutes into something that should be self-obvious. It should be obvious. The only way forward, the only way we make progress is following the data, not using anecdote or stories or a political process that demonizes the other side. We need a political party that, and we can have a political party that's non-partisan, that's just dedicated to process. Democracy is a process, and we have the Democratic Party that's should be about promoting better, more intelligent democracy. And then we have the Republican Party, representation. That's a process. Neither of our political parties that are named after processes are dedicated to a process that promotes better policy. They're just dedicated to a fight. You know, knuckle, they're just dedicated to picking a side and then fighting for your side. And that's not how good conflict resolution works. That's not how science works. That's not how anything works. It's a stupid process for stupid people. Let's start a better process that's dedicated to the survival and flourishing of the human species.